What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
It's hour three of the show, Chris and Amy on 104.1 FM KMOX. We appreciate you being with us. Gas House Gang is at 12 o'clock talking Cardinals baseball and more during that hour, Bernie Miklas and me. It is time to go to the guest line this morning, and it's a sort of, the way I understand it, bit of a butterfly effect thing here, where there are regulations with tech companies in the EU, in the European Union, that end up affecting us here and could end up affecting you and your paycheck and your 401k and your tax bills. It's a little convoluted, but to talk about what is actually going on here and how it does affect you is Trevor Wagoner, who is the CCIA's chief economist, and that is the Computer and Communications Industry Association. Trevor is with us here on KMOX. How you doing, Trevor?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing great. So let's start with that. Let's explain to people what is actually going on. What are we talking about in terms of these European Union regulations of companies like Apple and Google and how it then affects us here? And we may not realize it.
Certainly. So there's been an explosion in EU regulation of U.S. tech companies. Beginning around 2015, back then there were just two pieces of EU digital regulation and they were only a couple dozen pages long. Fast forward just a decade later and there are now over 16 distinct digital regulations with over 900 pages of text. And the costs of complying with all of these rules really add up. We partnered with academics to estimate the costs and found they're as high as about $100 billion per year, which is obviously very, very significant. These are big companies that employ a lot of Americans. And they don't just affect the employees of those companies, although obviously those are the most directly impacted folks. Because most of the companies that are targeted by these EU regulations are traded on the S&P 500, which gets tracked by most index funds. Put all these rules together, and these EU rules are costing S&P index funds about 5% of their values. They're really dragging down U.S. retirement funds, pension plans, and just ordinary savers' investments.
Yeah, the study or the way you've published your report on this study is aptly named the $97 billion problem you've never heard of. And I really hadn't until this was brought to my attention through your work that the regulations that we talk about in the EU, well, those are directly affecting maybe your 401k or your retirement plan. Can you give a specific example of a regulation? This is the regulation that passed, and this is how it's affecting companies that affect our pocketbooks?
Oh, certainly. So probably the most prominent of the EU digital regulations, and there are 16 now, but the most famous one is the Digital Markets Act. And that's a very prescriptive piece of regulation, requires U.S. Tech companies operating in Europe to really change how they do business, imposes a wide array of limitations on business practices, and really forces companies to rewrite core elements of their apps and online experiences in ways that have taken a huge amount of staff time to try to implement. Probably the biggest issue with the DMA is that it's really impossible to know whether or not you're complying, because what happens is you invest a lot in compliance, and then a few months later, you get told by European Union regulators, guess what? We don't think you've gone far enough. You need to go further. So sort of the required staff time and investments never end. And hanging over your head the entire time, like a sword of Damocles, is this risk that they could fine you 10% of your global revenue, for violations that they're alleging in Europe. So even if your European business is only a small fraction of your revenues, they can come after you for a full 10% of global turnover. And we've seen some very large fines with other EU regulations thus far. So companies are taking this very seriously.
So a lot of these regulations, as I understand it, are antitrust regulations, which I think inherently are a good thing, are they not? So how is it that those regulations that are, trying to protect people end up hurting us here? Why, where is that discrepancy happening?
So I would say that framing it as antitrust, it's a common framing, but it kind of undersells the extent of the regulations. There are antitrust elements. There are also very prescriptive elements that just sort of tell companies how they have to design their apps, design their websites, all of that, that are simultaneously prescriptive while also not necessarily having a clear safe harbor, which is to say that just because a rule comes through that says you can't do X and you have to do Y, that's not always as easy as it sounds when it comes to actually coding an actual customer experience or a website. It's easy to write in legalese. It's difficult to execute. And that's where a lot of the difficulty comes in. So even with good intentions, and many of these rules do come from a place of good intentions, the unintended costs can be absolutely enormous when it comes to, you know, about $2.2 billion per year in just direct compliance costs. Tens of billions of dollars per year in lost revenues because all of these redesigns end up reducing revenue streams for the companies that comply, and tens of billions more in fines that are being threatened that are very, very plausibly going to be imposed despite the fact that they're investing so much in trying to comply.
Is it one of those issues that is just a trade-off, like one of the many trade-offs? I mean, whether it's politics or commerce or the economy, there's always going to be trade-offs. And it's like, okay, yes, the European regulations are costing these companies billions of dollars, but the only other alternative would be to pull out of those markets, which would hurt the companies way more than the regulations.
So that there are other alternatives, and this has actually come up in some of the trade talks between the United States and the EU. A lot of what industry is pushing for is simply a more reasonable set of expectations around the enforcement of these rules. Right now, there's a very strong incentive to sort of hit fast and hit hard with very large penalties, even if a company is making a demonstrably good faith effort to comply. And just bringing down some of these initial fine amounts and giving more time to actually come into compliance would do a lot to really lessen the potential impact here. That 10% of global turnover threshold is sort of a big, big point of contention because really, you know, if you're talking about many of these companies, you know, the European Union is not their biggest market. They do not want to pull out of the European Union because it's still a sizable market. It's a major point of market access importance for U.S. trade and U.S. digital exports, which are a key export driver for the United States. And we don't want to lose market access. So, you know, what we want to do is come to a modus vivendi with Europe where we can say, you know, we want to comply, you know, work with us to comply. Don't threaten us with multi-billion dollar fines or very minor disagreements in terms of, you know, very sincere compliance efforts.
As this does end up affecting Americans, whether directly or indirectly, is there something that people can do about it, or is this largely out of our hands?
So I would say, you know, in terms of what the United States as a whole can do, it's very much focusing on this in the ongoing trade talks with the European Union. We have a framework so far, but a lot of the details on the digital side are still being decided. When it comes to ordinary users, it's a classic issue where you can, you know, write to your congressman or give them a call and ask them whether or not they've, you know, reached out to the White House about making sure that addressing these issues is covered in ongoing discussions with the European Union, because again, it's an important trading relationship. We know the details are still being worked out, and we're optimistic that a mutually agreeable outcome can be come to.
You mentioned the ongoing conversations with the European Union. Obviously, with this administration, there's been a lot of discussion and negotiations regarding tariffs and trade and so forth. But this particular conversation Did this start with the Trump administration? Did it start with the Biden administration or even before that?
So as I said, this really began about in 2015, so the very end of the Obama administration, but it's really been escalating across time. We saw a huge uptick in the first Trump administration, a continued major uptick through the Biden administration, and there's really no sign of it slowing down in the Trump administration. The European Union has a long list of additional laws and regulations they want to bring down that would disproportionately target U.S. tech companies, the same way that they've targeted them through the DMA. Using very often the exact same threshold. So if we don't sort of get them to move away from this model in which they're specifically targeting U.S. companies, there could be some additional pain suffered by U.S. companies, U.S. employees, and reductions in U.S. exports. So it's definitely a top-tier issue that we want to address in these trade talks.
You mentioned, what was the number? You had a number of certain regulations that were the more well-known ones, like 12 or 16. What was the number of regulations you mentioned?
So we went from two back in 2015 to 16 as of the end of 2024, and there are several more in the pipeline. So that number is continuing to grow unless we get the European Union to take a different tack.
And so it's interesting that they began those conversations in 2015 when there were only two. Were they just anticipating that a lot more regulations would be implemented?
So as additional regulations were proposed, it became a definite source of ongoing discussions between the U.S. and the European Union, because it became very apparent that many of these rules were being designed in such a way that they would specifically target U.S. companies, often by setting these very high global revenue thresholds such that local companies in Europe wouldn't be hit, but U.S. companies would be due to their global revenues, even if the European market size of their activities was relatively small. And that sort of discriminatory treatment has been a recurring feature of many of the rules in the European Union that really carve in most leading U.S. companies without necessarily hitting any or many European companies.
Trevor, you were at one point just a few years ago in the State Department as a chief economist there. And so as you have, you know, left that role and now with the CCIA, and you look at where we are in terms of our economy, the tariffs, you know, we were talking here about regulations, you know, we're trying to navigate artificial intelligence as well and what those regulations might look like, how it might affect the economy. What do you believe the overall health of our economy is right now?
So as of right now, the economy is actually doing fairly well. That's not to say that there aren't some challenges. Certainly, we've seen a bit of an uptick just this morning in producer prices, which can be a sign that inflation might be a bit of a problem. We certainly have a deficit that's a little bit larger than most economists would like to see. But all in all, the unemployment rate remains relatively low. And the U.S. position globally is fairly strong. There are some challenges out there. There are certain industries that are facing discriminatory treatment, including the U.S. tech industry facing some discrimination in Europe. But we start from a position of relative strength. That said, a lot can happen in a relatively short amount of time. And we are very aware that there are certain threats that are faced by the U.S. economy, particularly because when you already have a fairly strong economy that is starting to face some inflation, you can run into issues if unemployment starts to creep up and there isn't really any fiscal room for stimulus. And that's definitely something I know many economists are keeping an eye on.
Trevor, we appreciate the discussion today. Really good information, and thank you for educating us on this thing that most people don't know about. Mm-hmm. So we really do thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Trevor Wagner, the chief economist for the Computer and Communications Industry Association, visiting with us here on KMOX. You can follow him on Twitter at EconWags. And, you know, to follow along his work, it's really, I had, like you said, Amy, no idea about any of this. So, yeah, now I feel a little smarter.
Well, good. I'm proud of you.
Thank you. It's Chris and Amy on KMOX.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Chris Ranji, Amy Mark scores with you on a Thursday, which is the Friday of the weekdays.
Thank
you for texting in, being part of the show today. Ranji, you've probably seen this. It's been everywhere in the St. Louis news, but also national. It was on CBS National News today. A really tragic story. Hopefully that it doesn't end in a tragedy, but a man is fighting for his life in a St. Louis hospital after he was infected with a brain-eating amoeba while water skiing at the Lake of the Ozarks last week. So the Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services reported on Tuesday that it was a lab-confirmed infection of this brain-eating microscopic amoeba that's commonly found in warm fresh water like lakes, rivers, and ponds. And we've read several stories over the past couple of years where you see the headline pop up about a brain-eating amoeba and, you know, a woman who died. And it's usually someone, I feel like swimming in a random creek or a random lake. That's how it usually feels. But this was at the Lake of the Ozarks, and the water in the Ozarks can be very warm. In August, it can go from 75 to 86 degrees. That's warm enough that these amoebas can survive. They are reminding people that it is very, very rare, but they're there. They're those in the lake water, and the people are infected with this parasite usually through the nose. So yep. While you're swimming, diving, jumping in, of course, anybody who's been water skiing has fallen. I have, and I've gotten water in my nose because you fall kind of violently into the water when you're water skiing, and so you can get water up your nose. And I was listening to Fred Bottomer this morning on Total Information AM, and his interviews with health experts said, well, you can hold your nose or wear a nose clip when you jump in or water ski. But this young man is in a hospital fighting for his life. It's a 97% mortality rate.
It's bad.
It's really, really bad.
The amoeba is called Negleria fowleri. And I know that it is, like you mentioned, it is extremely rare. It's something like less than 10 cases a year in the entire country. It just doesn't happen. And also, like you mentioned, it happens in warmer water. Once it gets to be about 77 degrees or higher, that's when the risk of this is greater. But you also just don't think of this in a lake.
Ozarks, like maybe some random,
more like a stagnant, a stagnant little pool of water. Yeah. You would think it would happen there, not in a lake, like is what occurred here.
So early symptoms of the condition can feel like the flu: headache, fever, nausea, and vomiting. They say if you have been swimming in warm water, lake water, fresh water, and you start to feel these symptoms, go ahead and get medical get checked out by a medical professional right away, because this amoeba can lead to a coma and death in just 5 days. So you start feeling sick, and within 5 days, you could be dead. You mentioned how rare it is. Between 1962 and 2024, there were 167 reported cases in the United States. From 1962 to 2024, of those 167 cases, only 4 people survived.
Damn, that's just really sad. And here's another, this is important to note, that this can sometimes happen. You know how people use like the neti pot or the nasal irrigation stuff? When you do that, always, always, always use distilled water. Yeah. Do not use tap water.
Because
it can happen with tap water. And I know people that don't think about it, and they use the neti pot or the...
Because you're like, I drink tap water, right? And you think it's clean.
It can't go through your sinuses.
Yeah.
That's really bad. So always use distilled water. You can go buy it. It's like $1 at the grocery store.
Well, there was a woman recently, like in the past year, I don't know I cannot remember if she ended up passing away, but she was very ill. If maybe she did pass away because she used the water from like their RV, the RV water system. Yeah, for a neti pot. And that was not good. But last month, and this is that the St. Louis Post-Dispatch reminds us, last month, 12-year-old Jason Carr died from an amoeba 2 weeks after spending 4th of July swimming in one of South Carolina's most popular lakes.
Yeah.
I mean, these are big lakes that people go to, and we've all, you know, been there. Kids, you always see kids behind the boat. They're water skiing, they're surfing, they're tubing, whatever it is. And I know, again, in Fred Bottomer's report, the doctor said it's extremely rare, but you need to be aware that it's out there. And I feel kind of like, what am I supposed to do with that information?
Just not getting warm water?
I know.
Don't do warm, fresh water.
I mean, does it mean you don't go to the Ozarks? Or does it mean, hey, I'm willing to go to the Ozarks, but if I get a fever afterwards,
yeah,
and feel sick, I need to go to a doctor right away? It's such a terrible situation. We're praying for him, hoping that he is able to pull through. But it's scary.
Big Blonde Dan texted in and said, this is exactly why Chris has never been and now will never go to the Ozarks. Well, it's not helping. But it's not the Ozarks' fault. You know,
no.
But it's, I imagine.
So
I think that this is, I hope not. Mm-hmm. But I can see this as if water continues to get warmer. If this happens more frequently. Again, it's very, very rare, but.
So Missouri,
when it does happen, it's pretty tragic.
Missouri health officials did say, you know, if you are worried about it, hold off visiting places like lakes and creeks and rivers while the water is so warm. So if you probably go in June, the water's probably not that warm yet. You go later in the fall. It really does seem to hinge on how warm that water is.
And also, it's important to note that it doesn't. Water doesn't cool down just because one day it's cooler. It takes a very long time for water to start to reflect the atmosphere because it holds heat and it takes some time. So if you go and it's like it's been 90 degrees or 100 degrees for weeks and then one day it's 70, that doesn't mean that the water is suddenly cold because it's not.
So quick notes to avoid this type of amoebic infection. The CDC suggests holding your nose or wearing a nose clip if you're jumping or diving into fresh water. I'd say, you know, water skiing, that type of activity. Always keep your head above water if you go to hot springs. I've been to hot springs. Keep your head above water. Don't dive in shallow water because the amoeba is more likely to live there, probably warmer for longer. Use distilled or boiled tap water when rinsing your sinuses or cleansing your nasal passages.
That's Amy Marks-Kors. I'm Chris Ranji. Mm-hmm. We're with you until 12 o'clock today. Gas House Gang is coming up then. Bernie Miklas and me, we will be talking Cardinals baseball. They blew it last night. They had a lead in the ninth inning and let it go. Big picture here, though, I think we're focused on the future with this Cardinals team. But we'll talk to Bernie. Talk a little college football, too, with Bernie Miklas as well. And we want to hear from you. 314-436-7900. You got to tell us the worst song ever, what you believe to be the worst song ever recorded. And if you have a thing that has affected you, like you've done something really minor in the morning, like forgotten to do something. For me, I forgot my watch and my whole day is thrown off as a
result.
He's
really off his game.
So what is your thing that will just absolutely ruin your whole day? Let us know. 314-436-7900 on KMOX.
Sister. Why didn't we win a Murrow? The newsroom won a Murrow. Why didn't we?
Yeah, congratulations to the KMOX newsroom for winning a Murrow
nationally
award.
Nationally recognized newsroom. And we've got that. I mean, here we're making award-winning radio right now because remember that song that goes.
So, yeah, KMOX News. National Edward R. Murrow Award for Breaking News. There were 16 large market radio awards presented this year. NPR got 13 of them, and there were only three other commercial stations that that won. St. Louis was the smallest market that won. This look
incredible newsroom.
KMOX is awesome.
Yeah.
And I'm not just saying that because I'm here.
Well, we're doing our job to bring it down, probably.
No, they're fine.
Here's the best thing about KMOX. Nobody knows that we're on at this time. I've heard awesome. The promos.
We can get away with so much.
At 9. Oh, wait, wait. Now the news. At 1, the fun. They totally skip over the midday show.
Remember how Major Garrett said, Debbie Boone's You Light Up My Life was the worst song ever? Yeah. Another texter completely agreed with him.
Yeah.
And when we asked him the question, he did not hesitate.
It was as if we had prepped him for the question.
And we did not.
No. As you could tell when we asked him what ruins his day, he's unflappable. This guy has diversified and layered his routine so that he's never off.
I'll tell you what makes his day, talking to us every Thursday at 10:30, right here on 104.1 FM KMOX.
With tears flowing down his eyes as he drives, the window's down, the wind in his hair. Maybe he had a real moving moment.
I will not ever get over the fact we asked him his least favorite, the worst song ever, and he didn't even think about
it. Think about it.
He goes, "You light up my life." Terrible. Text message here after we played the Tiny Tim song.
Oh my gosh, she is Pat Boone's daughter.
Is it really? Yeah.
Pat Boone always wears white shoes.
Okay. Isn't he dead? I think Pat Boone's got to be gone.
I thought he died a long time ago, but I thought we were going to talk to him.
So, oh my God, you're right. We had an opportunity to talk to Pat Boone, and you said no.
Because all I know, he wears white shoes.
And now we could have asked him about his daughter's crappy song.
Here's why I know he wears white shoes. It's because my mom, when I was a little kid, my mom's like, "Oh, I can never wear white shoes." I said, "Why?" She goes, "Because it reminds me of Pat Boone."
So we played the Tiny Tim song, Tiptoe Through the Tulips, and a texter,
through the garden.
This texter says, "I literally just looked up this number while listening so I could say never play that high-pitched garbage again. Burn it and burn every copy of it that's ever existed and put out a virus to destroy all digital copies, too. Side note, my least favorite song is Amazing Grace."
Oh, jeez. Well, he wouldn't like Pat Boone because I think Pat Boone sang that. Wow. Well, did you hear about this in the terms of worst songs? So there were rescue teams in British Columbia.
Yeah.
There was a camper like screaming for help in distress, and multiple people hiking said, "We don't know what's going on. This guy is being attacked by a bear." This is a true story. So this just happened last week. So they called, and a couple of Mounties showed up.
Yeah, on the horseback.
Yep, as well as search and rescue crew, and they found him. It turns out he was not screaming for help in distress. He was singing Nickelback at the top of his lungs while he was hiking. They said they decided not to charge him for the rescue effort.
Well, he wasn't... what?
He was singing.
Just let a man have his moment of peace.
Look at this graph!
Pat Boone is 91 years old, and this texter says, "I'm pretty sure they still wheel him out on stage every night down in Branson."
A lot goes on in Branson, I think.
Not sure if he's alive or dead, though. Well, they're not wheeling out Pat Boone's corpse in Branson.
That's so mean.
Is Debbie Boone alive? Let's find out.
Yeah, if Pat's alive,
well,
Debbie's alive.
You don't know. I would be, she's 68. She's still alive.
I do think we should do the best Boones, and that could count like economic Boone or Boone for the economy. It should be all Boones. Aaron Boone.
This message says Debbie Boone wears white shoes after Labor Day. Okay. That is a no-no.
Listen, I don't think we're going to win awards for today's show with texts
like
that. What do you
mean? What do you mean? Of course we are. This is an award. Look, if there is an award out there to be had and you know about it, please submit this show.
Well, people have been had, I can tell you that.
Yeah. All right.
Do we have any more submissions ready, or were those our submissions, Tyler? Okay.
That's great.
What's Scat Man? Is that a song?
I don't know what that is.
I don't either. It says it's catchy but annoying.
Okay.
I don't know that song.
Well, I think we're done.
You think we should be?
I think we're done here for the day because it's time to talk a little Birds baseball. Cardinals blew it last night. I think that's one of those games that it probably really punches you in the gut if they are in really the thick of a playoff race. Right now, they're four games back. I think we all a lot of people have punted on the season.
Yeah.
Cardinals fans have, and that's understandable because they traded away at the deadline. They subtracted from the roster. So that's the kind of game that would really irritate you if they were right in the thick of it.
But here's the thing. I think we put people in a good mood going into the Gas House game.
I agree with you. I agree with you. We'll do it again tomorrow, 9 a.m. We got Hancock and Kelly with us from 9 till 10. We got a good show tomorrow. May not top today, but it's going to be a good one, we promise. Mm-hmm. If you missed anything, it's on the Odyssey app. Get the podcast, download it, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back with you tomorrow, 9 o'clock. Amy Marks, Cora's Chris Ranji on KMOX. It is the Gas House Gang. Next, Bernie Miklas and me on 104.1 FM.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.